Countdown for blast off. X minus 5, 4, 3, 2, X minus 1, fire. From the far horizons of the unknown come transcribed tales of new dimensions in time and space. These are stories of the future, adventures in which you'll live in a million could-be years on a thousand maybe worlds. The National Broadcasting Company, in cooperation with Street & Smith, publishers of Astounding Science Fiction, presents The Martian Death March. I've always been interested in lost causes. The revolt of the Scottish Jacobites against England, the last stand of the Cherokee and Sioux Indians, and the death march of the Martian Highlanders in 1997. There's been a lot written about that march. The UN Commission report covers four volumes, but the whole story isn't down on paper yet. I know it because I was on that march from the beginning to the end. There's one part of the story that no one ever mentions. The Martian Death March of 97 was led by an Earthman. Maybe you've been over the route of the march. There wasn't any highway there 30 years ago in 97. There was desert, hot, burning desert. I lived at the edge of the Kalmak Canal then with my father. He was a prospector searching the surrounding desert with sonar probe and Geiger counter, scratching just enough ore from under the Martian sands to pay for our grub stake the next year. I remember he was in the Adamson Digger in the North Quadrant when I came running out that day.
There's somebody coming, Dad, across the desert.
You sure?
I saw them. They're a couple of miles out.
Well, how many cars?
They're on foot.
On foot across the desert?
Honest, Dad. I saw them.
Are you sure it wasn't a light reflection off the canal?
No. It was dark against the sand.
I don't like that. You run back and get the rifles out. I've got to pull the digger into the shed.
Is there going to be fighting, Dad?
I don't know. I got a whole year's ore piled out back in the bins, and I ain't going to lose it to no claim jumpers. You go back to the shack and break out those rifles and see they're loaded, you hear? And jump.
Dad had three surplus army rifles and a couple of homemade grenades made out of ore cans stuffed with Adamson A explosives. We crouched inside the shack, waiting. The shadow of the water tower in the doorway grew longer as the quick Martian dusk settled down over the desert.
And there they come, Al. There's two of them.
What's that on the first one's back?
Why, I haven't seen one of those in 20 years.
What is it?
A one-man desert tank. They used to carry water that way before Adamson put out the air-still units.
There's something funny about that second one. Look, he's all spindly, and his head's funny.
He's funny, all right. Al, that's a Martian.
I never saw one off the reservation before.
Well, there hasn't been one, not in 10 years. I don't like this.
Here they come into the dooryard.
You remember what I told you? Line up the sights and just squeeze the trigger.
Hello! Hello there!
Now, Dad?
Hello!
Wait a minute. What do you want?
Water! I need water!
Who are you?
My name is John.
John, huh? What are you doing with that spider?
His name is Kantalka.
I don't care what his name is. What's a human doing with a Martian?
I found him in the dry bed of Kalmak Canal. Nearly dead of thirst.
He probably ran off from the reservation.
When our brothers are caged, they seek freedom.
Brothers? Those spiders?
All living creatures are our brothers. On Mars, as on Earth.
Hey, wait a minute. Bert Ostrom at False Wells told me there was a screwball hedge preacher over there hollering about letting the spiders loose off the reservations.
Let no man call his own. No man, nor tribe, nor nation.
I guess that's you, all right. Bert told me they called you Crazy John. I don't suppose there's any harm in you. Fill your tank up at the air still, and you can even have supper with us.
We would be happy to.
We? What do you mean, we?
Cantal Carr and myself.
That spider? Oh, no, I ain't having a Martian sit down and eat with me. You come on, though.
Thank you, sir. No. Where my brother is not welcome, I cannot go.
Well, suit yourself. Al, get the key to the water tower. Come out here.
All right, Dad.
And put away the guns. We won't have any trouble from these two.
The old man filled his tank at the air still tower, and the Martian went through the ash pile for half-burned fuel brick. When we went in the house for supper, I could see them silhouetted against the fire. The old man with his wild hair and beard, and the thin, spidery arms and legs of the Martian.
Dad?
What?
Are all the Martians on the reservation?
Yeah. All but a couple of wild ones in the mountains up north. The patrol catches a couple every year.
Why?
Well, they murder people.
No, I mean, why are they on the reservation?
Because it's the safest place to keep them, they're past us all.
How many are there?
Oh, I don't know. A few thousand. They keep dying off.
Why?
Well, they catch earth diseases. Chickenpox almost wiped out the whole gang of them 2 years ago.
Chickenpox? I had that. It didn't wipe me out.
Well, you ain't a Martian.
I was born on Mars.
Well, I mean you ain't one of those spiders. Now eat your food, it'll get cold.
Okay. Dad...
Oh, what now?
Were the Martians always on the reservation?
Well, since the Outpost 3 massacre, they have been.
What was that?
Oh, back before you were born, they lived wild in the mountains up north.
Were they fierce?
Fierce enough. Only place for them spiders, behind wire.
Yeah, it sure is.
Out in the dooryard, the campfire flickered at the base of the water tower. The first of the Martian moons had set. The other wouldn't rise for several hours. I could hear the sandpipers out in the desert as I stood there. The old man and the Martian were sitting on the ground, huddled close to the fire. It gets cold fast on the desert when the sun goes down.
Is that you, boy? You can come up to the fire if you like.
My dad wouldn't like it.
All right.
But I'm not afraid of no spider.
No, there is nothing to be afraid of.
How come his arms are all skinny?
Ask him.
Does he talk?
Yes, his name is Cantal Carr.
It is, huh? Hello.
Hello, boy.
He talks funny.
It is not my language.
Why isn't he on the reservation? You can get in trouble helping spiders to escape.
No man has the right to imprison the innocent. They that are enslaved will be freed. They that are in sickness and misery will be comforted. They that are exiled in a strange place will be restored.
My dad says the spiders are treacherous, cowardly, murdering savages. That's what he says.
Boy, there was a time on this world when there were no Earthmen, when the ships and the machinery of Earth were unknown. Then the people of the highlands lived in peace. But today they are a handful, starving, dying behind the wire.
But the reservation isn't so bad.
Our home is in the mountains of the north, not the desert.
I heard a voice which cried out to me in the desert, "Go to your brothers."
Do they really call you Crazy John?
I have been called many things.
You really think we ought to let those old spiders off the reservation?
Boy, we die here in the desert. We die in the sun and of the sicknesses you have brought from Earth.
That's 'cause Martians are just weak. I'll bet I could knock you down myself.
You could. We are a different people. We have not the strength of muscle of Earthmen. But we will not stay here to die.
You won't get off the reservation. The patrol takes care of all that. They won't let any stinking old spiders out.
Ah, even in the minds of children is planted the poison of evil. How long?
That night through the window, I could see the flicker of the old man's campfire. He was walking up and down now, shouting, singing hymns verse after verse, his white beard catching the light as he passed behind the fire. The Martian sat slumped over, his thin, spindly arms folded across the huge barrel chest that had developed over the centuries as the air of Mars thinned and escaped into space. In the morning, I looked out, and they were gone. Looking back now, we wonder how they did it. The high-voltage wire around the reservation carried a fatal charge. The patrolmen in the tower had 50-caliber machine guns. The desert around the camp was mined heavily. Yet, at dawn, August 7th, 1997, they broke out. I was down at the dried-up canal bed hunting sandpipers when my father came running after me.
Al! Al!
Here I am.
Come on, back to the house.
What's the matter, Dad?
You shut up and run.
What is it?
The spiders busted loose. Bert Olstrom radioed in.
They come in here?
They're headed this way, the murdering devils.
They kill anybody?
6 patrolmen when they busted through the wire.
What are you going to do, Dad?
Fire a keg of Adamson A across the gate. You get in there and get the guns out.
I got the rifles and shoved a full clip in each one. Then I slipped a primer fuse and the homemade grenades and lugged them out to the porch. Dad was running lead wires back to a detonator from a half keg of Adamson A he'd set across the gate.
There. And that's set. Now give me one of those rifles.
Will they be here soon?
You can see the dust over the rise. Murdering spiders.
What'll they do?
I don't know. Now make sure you get a good sight, Al. Don't waste any bullets.
There they are, Dad. There they come.
Oh, wait a minute. Hold up now. I want to get a good shot. Let him get closer.
Dad, that's Crazy John up in front. There. He's taller than the spiders. You can see his beard.
You're right. Oh, that renegade rat. He probably helped him break out of the reservation. Listen, Al. If anything happens to me, you ride out back to the shed. You can hide out in the empty ore bins till they go away. Now, you got that?
All right, Dad.
We're going to come in.
The spider's shouting something, Dad.
Probably a trick. Get down a little, Al. You're in the way. I got him clear now. Right in the head. Up a little now. Got him. Got him, Al.
Dad, look out. They've got guns.
Down. Get down. Ooh.
Dad.
Get out, Al. Get out to the shed.
Dad, you're hit.
Go on. Those spiders are going to rush. Now get going.
No, I can't let
you. Shut up and get out of here. You hear? Get out of here.
I ran back through the house to the shed. Behind me, I could hear the Martians sweeping up to the dooryard. Then suddenly, the ground shook, and I could feel the dull concussion waves hit my ears as the Adamson A exploded. I could hear the high, whispered screams of the Martians and the rattle of fragments on the metal roof of the shed. I dived into the empty ore bin and slammed the hatch almost shut. I sat there waiting. And then suddenly, a shadow fell across the edge of light, and the hatch slid open on top of me.
Kill you.
Boy, I've been looking for you.
Where's my dad? What did you do to my dad?
He's dead.
You killed him. You and those spiders. I'll kill you. I'll kill all those stinking murdering spiders.
They are our brothers, boy. Your father shot without warning, and the fire was returned against my orders.
You mean you weren't gonna attack us?
Our brothers came in peace. They are going home to their mountains. We came to get water for the journey.
You mean you just wanted water? You... Dad! Dad!
John, the Earth Patrol will be following us soon.
We must go.
And the boy?
We'll have to leave him here with water and supplies.
No, the Earth Patrol would question him. We need the time. He goes with us.
They tore the Adamson air still from the tower and mounted it on poles. They piled our supplies in the yard and loaded them on their backs. And then they started. I marched with the old man at the head, and the column stretched out behind us on the desert. I turned to look back at our house, but the sun was behind it, blinding red. The old man pulled me around as he marched, his eyes fixed on the horizon, where far to the north rose the cool mountains that were the ancient home of the Highlanders. 14 of the Martians died the first day. They dropped to the side of the column when they could go no farther and died. But the march went on. On the fifth day, we swung wide to avoid a mining settlement, but not wide enough. The miners were in ambush behind a pile of rocks.
Them home, home to the promised rest, home to the mountains. March forward, march forward.
And the march went on. We wound across the desert in wild zigzags, following the paths the old man had traveled through the years. Only once a patrol plane hovered on the horizon and then shot away. The days went on. The weeks, and the Martians died. They died of exhaustion. They died of the diseases we had given. And they died of thirst. The Adamson still could produce 27 units of water an hour, no more. And on that, they died of thirst.
Here, boy, here's your water.
But that's more than the others got.
Take it.
It's yours. You're giving me your water.
It will be provided to me. He that brings justice to his brothers will drink deep of the water of righteousness. He that... Drink your water, boy!
Across the desert, from the Kalmak Canal to Fever Dip, past the towering mesas of the Higgins Badlands, across the dry sea bottoms they marched. On the 54th day of the march, we halted at evening. The air was thinner, colder now. The rations had long since been exhausted. I lay down to sleep, wrapped in the old man's coat. Early in the morning, before sunrise, I woke suddenly. The ground mist that had covered the desert the night before was lifting slowly. And I saw the old man standing by the burned-out fire, the vapor swirling around his legs in the cold light of the false dawn, edging his wild beard.
Go back to sleep, boy.
I can't.
The end is near. I have led them through the wilderness, dry shod across the seas, and before us lie the mountains.
You mean we're almost there?
When the mist is taken from the eyes of man, the place of refuge can be seen.
You mean the mountains? It's over. We're there.
I have led them to their home, and I must go back to the desert.
You mean alone?
Now, even now, I hear a voice in the wind. Carry the message to the men of Earth. Bring to this new world the message of the old. All beings created in the universe are my brothers, and he that harms my brother harms me. Goodbye. Goodbye, boy. You'll be safe now.
Goodbye, John. Goodbye.
The Martians found him 500 yards from the camp, dead. Now the mist rose, and before us towered the highlands, the tall green mountains and the cool sky. The march was over. Of the 7,000 Martians who started, 900 were alive. They gathered now on the rise of ground and faced the hills. Their thin bodies wavered as they stood, and some dropped to the ground as they stood there. But there was a light of hope in their large, staring eyes. Most of them had died, but they had died on the way home. And now the march was over. Then the patrol planes were spotted on the horizon, and within 10 minutes they had landed. The Martians stood silently as the squads piled out and set up the 50-caliber machine guns and the petroleum gel flamethrower.
All right, you spiders! Hands up and stay together! Gather in a bunch and don't try anything! Sergeant?
Yes, sir.
Shoot the first spider that moves. And shoot to kill. All right, where's that boy? There was a boy reported.
Here I am.
You all right, kid? They hurt you?
No, I'm all right. John gave me his water ration.
Oh, the leader, huh? Well, I've got a warrant for him. Where is he?
There. He's dead.
Huh? Oh. Well, just as well. I'd hate to be him in front of a settler's jury.
What are you going to do to them?
The spiders? See those transport planes coming in? We're going to ship them all back to the reservation where they belong.
You can't. You can't do that.
What are you talking about, kid?
You can't take them back. They're home. John said they were home. You can't take them back. It isn't fair. I won't let you.
Help.
I won't let you.
Hey, let go of me. Sergeant.
Yes, sir.
Peel this crazy kid off me.
All right now, kid. Take it easy. I must be shocked. Can't believe he's safe.
Yeah, I guess that's it. All right, you spiders. Step it up. Move along to those transport planes. It's all over now. You're headed right back to the reservation.
They separated them in groups of 50 and loaded them on the planes. 900 out of 7,000. And soon the first big-bellied ships waddled out on the hard sands and lifted slowly into the air, headed back to the south, flying over the trail of dead and dying who started on the march to the highlands. The march to home.
Don't worry about them spiders, kid. We'll take care of them. Come on now, kid. You'll feel better as soon as you get back. A civilization.
I looked once more at the green mountains towering through the mist. And then, just before the motor raced, I saw John. Crazy John, propped up against a dognut bush where the Martians had placed him. The wind from the south gave the wild hair and beard a rippling life. He faced the hills, the home and rest he had promised his brothers, as he led them through the wilderness of Mars.
You have just heard X-1, presented by the National Broadcasting Company in cooperation with Street & Smith, publishers of Astounding Science Fiction. X-1 was an NBC Radio Network production.
Do those kids need cars? I bet they're driving drunk. What do you think, Fish? Welcome back to Ricky Jin's Old Time Radio. Now enjoy this episode of Sherlock Holmes, entitled The Eyes of Mr. Layton.
This episode from the life of Sherlock Holmes will be transmitted to our men and women overseas by shortwave and through the worldwide facilities of the Armed Forces Radio Service. Petri Wine brings you Basil Rathbone and Nigel Bruce in the new adventures of Sherlock Holmes. The Petri family, the family that took time to bring you good wine, invite you to listen to Dr. Watson tell us another exciting story about his good friend, that master detective, Sherlock Holmes. And I'd like to tell you something that maybe you already know. The fact that America's favorite wine is port wine. Did you know that? If you didn't, you'll know why port is the way out front favorite if you'll just sample some Petri California port. You just look at that Petri port and you know it's good. That wonderful, deep, rich red color. And Petri port is so clear. Just hold it to the light and you can sort of see right through the glass. But what you want to know really about a wine is, how does it taste? And I'll tell you something. I've never yet been able to find the adjective that'll do Petri port justice. It's wonderful, honest. You've just got to taste it for yourself and find out for yourself. You'll love that Petri port in the evening after dinner, when you're sitting around listening to the radio. And it's perfect to serve your friends when they come over. You can show them that Petri label, too. In fact, you can show it proudly. Because the name Petri is the proudest name in the history of American wine. And now for our weekly doctor's visit. Let's see.
No, Mr. Bartell. Don't say let's see if he's expecting us. You know I always expect you this time on Monday evenings, my boy. So draw up your usual chair and settle down.
Thanks, Doctor.
Oh, that's it.
All alone this evening, Doctor? Where are the puppies?
Out on the patio. They had a most unfortunate encounter with a dead seal on the beach this afternoon. In consequence, they're a little malodorous, shall we say.
In that case, Doctor, perhaps we'd better change the subject. So, suppose I ask you about tonight's new Sherlock Holmes adventure.
Well, my boy, as I told you last week, the story took place in the foul alleyways of Limehouse. It was there on a foggy December evening in 1890 that my story began. An old friend and patient of mine, Isa Whitney, had disappeared, and his distraught wife had come to me for help. Knowing the man to be the victim of the shocking habit of taking opium, I suspected that I might find him in one of the vile dens inhabited by the dregs of the waterfront. And so, Mr. Bartell, about 5 o'clock on that December evening, I began my search. After an hour of fruitless wanderings, I found myself in a vile alley called Upper Swandam Lane. I could hear the distant moans of the riverboats as I walked, eyes alert, and hand on the revolver in my coat pocket. Suddenly, I saw a steep flight of steps leading down to a black gap, like the mouth of a cave. I walked down. The steps were worn hollow in the center by the ceaseless tread of stumbling feet. I reached the bottom. A door faced me, and above it, a flickering oil lamp winked warnings at me. I found the latch and lifted it. The door squeaked open protestingly. And I entered. There was a tinkle of Chinese wind bells as I walked towards a long, low room. A strange sight met my eyes. Through the gloom, thick and heavy with the brown opium smoke, I saw that the room was terraced with wooden berths, like the forecastle of an emigrant ship. Out of the shadows, there glimmered little red circles of light, now bright, now faint, as a burning poison waxed or waned in the metal pipes. Bodies lay in strange, fantastic poses. Bowed shoulders, bent knees, heads thrown back. The attendant came up to me with a pipe and beckoned me to an empty berth. I haven't come here to smoke your filthy drug. I'm looking for a friend, Mr. Isa Whitney.
No, Mr. Whitney here.
Well, I'm going to search the place.
You must not disturb the place.
I'm carrying a revolver, so you'd better not argue with me, my good man. Out of the way. I searched that filthy den, but found no trace of my missing friend. As I was leaving in despair, a long, shaking hand reached out and plucked at my sleeve. I turned, and there sprawled in a berth was the wreckage of a man, his gaunt face yellow and twitching, his clothes filthy and ragged, and the pupil of his eyes like pinpoints. He spoke to me in a thin, quavering voice.
For heaven's sake, get me out of here.
Now, look here, my man.
Don't say you won't help me, Governor. Ain't you got an art? Please help me, Governor. Take me out of here. Start to think I'm going to bomb you, I tell you.
Oh, what must you expect if you indulge in this filthy habit?
Take me out of here, Governor. I'll go straight this time. Cross me out, I will.
Oh, very well. Come along with me. I suppose it's my duty to help you.
Ah, bless you, Governor.
Here you are. Here now, give me your arm.
You cannot take him away. He owe me money.
That's a bleeding lie. I paid him when I come in, I did.
He cannot go with you, mister.
You remember what I said about my revolver, you blackguard? If I have any more trouble with you, I'll fetch the police. Come along.
He owe me money. He owe me money.
Infernal scoundrel, owe me money.
Tell him all proper, Governor. That off you didn't.
Now, look here, my good man. I'll give you a square meal, some advice, and some medical attention. But the rest...
Never mind the advice, Watson, but I'll take you up on that square meal.
Holmes!
Yes, I'm very glad to see you, old fellow. What brought you to that filthy den of iniquity?
Oh, gracious me, I want to find a friend.
And I, an enemy.
Your disguise is wonderful. It completely fooled me.
But I'm afraid the proprietor was beginning to penetrate it. That's why I staged the little rescue scene. Had I been recognized, my life wouldn't have been worth an hour's purchase.
Well, how long had you been there? Why were you there? Come on, Holmes. Tell me all about it.
With pleasure, old chap. But first, let's find a chop house. I want that square meal you promised me. An excellent meal, Watson.
Yes, they're surprisingly good for such a shoddy-looking place. Well, Holmes, now perhaps you'll tell me what you were doing in that opium den. I've already told you my story.
I'm shadowing a most unusual criminal. A man who haunts the opium dens. Yet I know that he himself is not an addict.
Well, I don't see anything very criminal about that. He might be looking for a thrill, or perhaps he's one of those writer fellows or something.
But this man pretends to be an addict. I've watched him closely. He fakes his smoking, and grease paint has enabled him to simulate the characteristic pallor of a drug victim. Even affects the typical mannerism of nose scratching, but it's his eyes that give him away.
The pupils are wide open, I suppose.
Exactly, old fellow. Whereas, if he were really addicted to the drug, they would, as you know, be contracted. I myself always treat my eyes with a special kind of drop on the occasion when I have to enter these dens.
Well, why does a man haunt an opium den in order not to smoke?
That, my dear Watson, is the problem that I intend to solve.
Well, perhaps the fellow's a policeman or a private detective like yourself, Holmes.
I've already checked on those possibilities. No, Watson, I believe there is only one answer. I believe the man is planning a murder.
A murder?
It's a tempting setting for a murder. Your victim is an addict, drugged and helpless. Your witnesses... they're in an equal state of befuddlement. The proprietor is anxious to cover up the crime because of the police.
That's you. Yes, Holmes.
Now, the question is, who is the intended victim? That, my dear Watson, is why I've been shadowing this man. Unfortunately, he was not present in the den we just left, but I intend to continue my search.
Holmes, can I help you? My wife's away, you know. No, it's a long time since we were on a case together.
I should be delighted, my dear chap. I've missed you sadly during the past few months.
And I, you, Holmes. What's the next move?
Back to Baker Street, old fellow. My disguise is wearing thin, and I must contrive a new one. New disguise, eh? Well, which one shall it be, Watson?
Oh, how about the old flower seller? I love that one.
Well, it's pretty fresh. Oh, no, my dear fellow, no. Hardly appropriate for an opium den. In any case, the clothes are so wretchedly uncomfortable.
Well, how about the music hall singer?
Oh, that chap, yes. Oh, I don't want to be beside the seaside. Oh, I don't want to be beside the sea. I don't want to stroll along the prom where the brass band plays tiddly. Oh, confound it. Who can that be?
You weren't expecting anyone, were you?
No.
So this is just like the old days. The doorbell ringing, Mrs. Hudson toddling off and... bringing up some poor devil in trouble and...
Say that rather wistfully, old fellow. Don't tell me that you repent of marriage.
No, of course not, Holmes. Mary's a perfect darling and I couldn't be happier. Just the same. It's rather fun to be back here again.
Come in. Yes, Mrs. Hudson?
It's a gentleman, sir. He gave me this card. Says he's very anxious to see you.
Wayne J. Layton, President, Layton Corporation, Chicago, United States. Ask him to come up, will you, Mrs. Hudson?
Aye, sir. Well, it's quite the cold times to see you back here, Dr. Watson.
That's just what I was saying myself, Mrs. Hudson.
Mr. Layton has scribbled a message on the back of his card. If £1,000 for a week's work interests you, you'll see me.
£1,000?
Big fish, Watson. Very big fish.
This week, sir.
Thank you.
Oh. How do you do, Mr. Layton?
I guess you're Sherlock Holmes.
You guessed correctly, sir. Excuse me.
Oh, Mrs. Hudson, just a moment, Mr. Hudson.
Aye, Mr. Holmes.
Sit down, won't you, Slayton? My name's Watson, Dr. Watson. I'm Sherlock Holmes' colleague.
Yes, I've heard about you, too. Like a cigar, Doctor? It's a good one. Send me back 3 shillings.
Oh, 3 shillings? Oh, thank you. That's very nice, sir. Just put one. Oh,
no, I've introduced yourself. Splendid. And now, Mr. Layton, may I ask what brings you here?
I'll talk fast and to the point. I'm a businessman. I like to do things in a business way. I have a chance to control the guano deposits at the Republic of San Pedro. Their minister will be in London tomorrow, and if it weren't for one thing, I know that I could swing the deal and get the concession.
And what is that one thing, Mr. Layton?
The deal is secrecy, I thought no one knew about it, but when I got here, I found out that my biggest business rival has gotten wind of what's going on. He's an Englishman. I've never met him, but he's right here in London. Now, I'm not going to tell you his name. Not until you give me your word that you'll work for me.
Just what you wish me to do, Mr. Layton.
Get this rival of mine and keep him out of circulation for a week. I don't care how you do it, and I won't ask. In a week's time, I'll give you the other half of this £500 I brought with me.
Oh, good Scott, what kind of effect
Watson,
do you...
Watson, give Mr. Layton his hat and gloves. That's it. Thanks, old fellow. Goodbye, sir.
What are you doing, throwing me out?
I can't think where you gathered the impression that I indulged in kidnapping. Once again, goodbye, sir.
And here, sir, you can take back your cigar.
Well, if you don't want some easy money, I'll soon find someone else that does. This is the last you'll see of me, Mr. Holmes.
Life is full of little consolations.
Some people seem to think that money can...
Watson, the game's afoot. Mr. Layton is the man I've been seeking. The man who pretends to be an opium smoker.
Why, Blaze, did you let him get away? Here, I'll go after him.
No. Don't worry. I've already arranged for that.
Oh, how?
When I left the room just now to talk to Mrs. Hudson, I was intending to tell her to summon some of my band of street urchins. You know, the Baker Street irregulars. When she informed me that half a dozen of them were in the kitchen at this very moment, partaking of one of her incomparable steak and kidney pies, the rest should be obvious.
You left instructions for one of them to shadow Mr. Layton when he left her.
Elementary, my dear Watson.
Oh, don't tell me that Layton back again.
No, I think not. I should say that at the moment he's just about to walk out of the front door. No, I think we shall have another visitor. And judging by the commotion, the incoming and the outgoing visitors know each other and are not on the best of terms.
Well, sounds to me as if they're having a fight.
Here comes Mrs. Hudson to tell us about it. Come in, come in.
Oh, Mr. Holmes, you've got another visitor.
So I gathered. Mrs. Hudson, you gave my instructions to one of the boys?
I did that, sir. Young Wiggins was going to follow the gentleman.
Oh, Mrs. Hudson, what was all that commotion about downstairs just now?
Oh, it was the two gentlemen shouting at each other. Him that was leaving and the one that was waiting on the doorstep.
And who is our new visitor, Mrs. Hudson?
Here's his card, sir.
Oh, thank you. Linton Chumley, 9 Belgrave Square. Well, ask him to come up, will you, Mrs. Hudson?
Very well, Mr. Holmes.
Oh, one thing more.
Yes, sir.
Please instruct another of the Baker Street irregulars to follow this Linton Chumley when he leaves here and report to me.
All right, sir.
You're taking no chances, Holmes, huh? You're having this fellow shadowed, too.
Layton is a potential murderer. Of that I'm convinced. This Mr. Chumley might possibly be his intended victim. While we are talking to him, Watson, old fellow, I want you to be sure to look at the condition of his eyes.
Yes, I certainly will.
Come in. Oh, good evening, Mr. Chumley.
Are you Mr. Sherlock Holmes?
I am. This is my colleague, Dr. Watson.
How do you do, sir?
That was Wayne Layton that was just left here, wasn't it?
Now, won't you sit down, sir?
Thank you. I don't want to sit down. All right, you needn't answer my question, but I know it was Layton. I've never met him, but I've seen his picture in the newspapers.
Oh, very well, then, sir. It was Wayne Layton.
Ah, I know why he came to you. He's trying to have me put out of the way while he closes that deal on the San Pedro and Guana concession. Now, look here, Holmes. You've got to be on my side. Whatever fee he offered you to dispose of me, I'll double it if you'll take care of him for a few days.
Ooh, dear me, this is becoming monotonous. Watson?
The hat and gloves?
Thank you, old chap. That's right. Good night, Mr. Chumley.
Look here, Holmes. I'll treble his fee. I'll quadruple it.
My dear Mr. Chumley, I have accepted no fee from Mr. Layton. I don't propose to accept one from you. Your hat and gloves, sir?
That man is out to kill me, Holmes. Well, if you won't help me, I'll go to the police.
That's an excellent idea, Mr. Chumley. Again, good night. Did you notice his eyes, Watson?
Yes, the pupils were contracted. He's obviously an opium addict.
And also a potential corpse.
Well, what do we do now? Wait for the irregulars to report?
No, you return home for your medical bag. I have a feeling that you'll need it before the night is out. Then come back here. If I've gone before you return, I'll send one of the irregulars to bring you to wherever I may be. Wait until you receive a message from me. On your way, old chap. There's work ahead of us.
Wiggins, you're certain that this is the place that Mr. Holmes told you to bring me to?
Oh, yes, Dr. Watson. The corner of Swanham Line and Brixell Street, Mr. Holmes said.
Yeah, well, this is the spot, all right. I don't see any sign of him. Hello? This old woman coming towards us. So that's the disguise he chose.
Oh, spare me a few coppers, will you, mister? My feet hurt something awful, and I ain't had a bite of food all day.
Oh, you don't, Holmes, you... Can't fool me this time. As a matter of fact, your makeup isn't very convincing. You hardly look like a woman, and nobody's nose could be quite as red as that.
Don't look like a woman, don't I? My nose is too red, is it? for sake, that!
No, steady, look
out. My funny, the poor old woman has tried to meet
her. Sorry, madam, I didn't mean to insult you.
Well, Mary, she gave you a bit of work for all right, didn't she? Ah, boxed your ears. No mistake about it.
You mind your own business. And anyhow, why aren't you aboard your ship at this time of night?
Because I'm not a sailor, Watson.
It's Mr. Holmes.
Great heavens, Holmes. I wish you wouldn't confuse me like this. I'd never recognized you.
My dear Watson, when you're able to recognize me, it will indeed be the beginning of the end. When your eagle eye penetrates my disguise, I shall realize that my retirement is imminent. But enough of this. See that house opposite?
You mean the ramshackle place with the broken tiled roof?
Yes, I gave the irregulars instructions to let them know at once if our two quarries ever enter the same house at the one time. They're inside there now, and I'm going in after them.
Be careful, Holmes. I'd better come along with you.
Can't I come too, Mr. Holmes?
No, certainly not. We'll keep watch outside. If I need any help, I'll smash one of the windows, and then you can come in after me. Wait here for me. I don't expect I'll be very long.
I'll be here, Holmes. Don't worry about me. Just take good care of yourself.
It's 1 o'clock, Doctor.
Yes, I know, Wiggins. We've been in there half an hour. I'm beginning to get worried.
Start going off,
no,
sir.
No, 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 Wiggins. You know Mr. Holmes. When he gives orders, he likes some... There's a signal for help. Keep watching the house, Wiggins. I'll be out in 5 minutes. Go for the police.
Right, you are, sir.
All right, Holmes, all right. I'm coming.
You have searched my house from basement to attic. Why do you not give up? I tell you again, there has been no one here tonight.
But my friend came in here half an hour ago. I saw him, and before that, two other men are known to have come in here.
If that is so, then where are they? Three men cannot vanish.
That's just the point, you scoundrel. Out of the way. I'm going to search this hovel again. I'm not leaving here until I find Mr. Sherlock Holmes.
You'll hear the rest of Dr. Watson's story in just a second. And if you don't mind, I'll take that second to say just one word to the ladies. And that word is Muscatel. Petri California Muscatel. I want you women to know about it because Petri Muscatel is one wine that practically every woman likes. Maybe because it's such a beautiful color, like pale gold. But I guess really because Petri Muscatel brings you the wonderful flavor of luscious, sun-ripened muscat grapes. And that's a flavor. Try Petri Muscatel after dinner, or any time as a change from Petri Port. Remember, if it's a Petri wine, you know it's a good wine. And now back to Dr. Watson and tonight's story, The Eyes of Mr. Layton. Well, what happened next, Doctor? When you searched the house for the second time, did you find any trace of Sherlock Holmes or the two rival businessmen?
No, Mr. Bartell, I'm afraid I didn't.
What did you do?
I told Wiggins to report the matter to the nearest police station and then rattle back to Baker Street in a hansom cab as fast as I could. When I arrived at the old familiar doorstep, I wrenched at the bell in a frenzy of anxiety. Finally, the door opened, and there stood Mrs. Hudson.
Dr. Watson, what is it, sir? Why, you're as white as a ghost.
Mr. Holmes... Is he here?
Aye, sir. Came in half an hour ago. He was dressed as a sailor and was half carrying some drunken friend of his.
Oh, thank heavens he's safe. I'll go up.
All right, sir.
I want to know, Jeff. There you are.
Holmes, I can't tell you how glad I am to see you. Who's that lying on the sofa?
Well, I'll be back, Watson. Oh, I'm afraid the poor devil's done for.
Great Scott, it's Wayne Layton, the American fella.
With a knife wound between his ribs. See what you can do for him, will you?
Right. This is extraordinary, Holmes. You said that Layton was a potential murderer. And now he's the victim himself.
The biter bit, eh, old chap?
Yes, he's still breathing, but he hasn't a chance. I'll try him with an injection of strychnine. Holmes, how did you get his body out of the house? I searched the place from top to bottom. I found no trace of any of you.
When I went in, I found the stabbing had already taken place. The proprietor then bribed me, or rather the broken-down cell he took me for, to smuggle the body out through the secret stairway leading to the wards at the back of the house.
Well, no trace of Chumley there?
No, he must have left before me by the same exit.
Well, then you smashed the window and bolted.
Yes, I knew that I could count on you to hold the fort while I was getting the body away.
Mm-hmm.
Try to say something, Watson.
Yes, the injection's beginning to take effect.
Yes, Mr. Layton? What are you trying to say?
Tell us who stabbed you, sir.
Lips are moving.
Mandalay.
He's dead, Holmes.
Yes, but he gave us the clue to the murderer's identity.
How?
In the word he mumbled just before he died.
It sounded to me as if he said Mandalay.
Precisely, old fellow. Never did a corpse give us a clearer instruction as to our next and final move.
And that is?
Back to Limehouse, Watson. Back to Limehouse. Here we are. This must be the place.
What's this? Another opium den?
Yes, I knew that since Chumley refrained from smoking earlier on in the night, in order to keep his faculties alert for murder, that an enormous reaction would set in. We'd have to find a den at once, and beyond question, a different one from that in which the murder was committed.
But how do you know that he's inside here?
Well, just before you returned to Baker Street tonight, I had a message from one of my regulars. He tracked him here after he escaped from the scene of the stabbing.
That was a couple of hours ago. He might have slipped away again.
No, Watson, tonight he came to drown his senses with a wretched drug. He'll be here. Come on.
That second injection of caffeine should bring him round. He's heavily drugged, but I think it'll work.
Surprising what a £5 note will do, isn't it?
Yes, the proprietor let us bring Chumley into his private room and he... He's coming too.
Who are you? What do you want?
You remember me, sir? I'm Sherlock Holmes.
Yes, I remember you.
You're in serious trouble, Mr. Chumley. Very serious trouble.
Trouble? What trouble?
Wayne Layton didn't die.
Oh.
He's badly wounded, but he's going to live. He's at Baker Street now. He wants to go to the police and give evidence.
You've got to get me out of this, Holmes. I'll pay you anything. $10,000, $20,000.
Why did you stab Layton?
He was in my way. I wanted the San Pedro concession. I meant to kill him. But we can fix it up now, can't we, Holmes? We can fix it up now.
Yes, we can fix it beautifully, sir.
As neat a murder confession as ever I listened to, Holmes.
Exactly. Come along, Mr. Chumley. I think some night air will be good for you. We'll take you for a nice drive to Scotland Yard.
I brought you some kippers, gentlemen. You've both been up all night, and I'm sure you can do it.
It's very thoughtful of you, Mrs. Watson.
Yes, indeed it is.
What is Mrs. Watson going to say when she finds you've been out all night?
Oh, don't you worry about that, Mrs. Hudson. She's very understanding.
It's lucky for you that she is. Well, I'll go and leave you to your breakfast.
Holmes.
Yes, dear fellow?
There's only one thing that puzzles me about this case.
Oh, what's that?
When Layton was dying, he muttered the word Mandalay. How did that give you the key to the murderer's identity?
Oh, the dead American had never met Mr. Chumley, you remember, except when they bumped into each other in our hallway.
Yes, he told us that he recognized him from the newspaper photograph.
Being an American, he had no reason to know that the name Chumley is in no way pronounced the way it is spelt.
But you never thought of that. Chumley. That name spelt C-H-O-L-C-H-O-M-O-N-M-O-N-D-E-D-E-R-L-E-Y. Charles Mandalay. Mandalay.
Precisely, old fellow. What you thought to be Mandalay was really Charles Mandalay, the name of the murderer.
What an amazing case. You did a remarkable job, Holmes. I'm beginning to be confoundedly sleepy.
Why not sleep, old chap? Your old room's all ready for you.
Are you going to take a nap?
Oh, dear me, no. I have much too busy a day ahead of me. Let me look at my engagement book. Baxter Square Murder. I put the police on the track. The Duchess of Ferrers. Now, I've got her material. The princess who was about to run away from home. Good gracious me, let her run. The Pope's cameos. Ah, yes, yes. His Holiness must not be kept waiting.
Can I help you again, Holmes? Mary doesn't return until tomorrow.
Well, I thought you were sleepy, old fellow.
Sleepy rubbish. I never felt more wide awake in my life.
was a swell story, Doctor.
I'm glad you enjoyed it.
And it was really funny when you mistook that old lady for Holmes and she slapped your face.
It wasn't very funny at all.
Ah, sure it was. Come on, admit it, Doctor.
Well, she did look like Holmes in disguise, you know, and you'd have made the same mistake that I did.
Okay, okay.
Her nose was ridiculously red, and she did look like a man.
Look, Doctor, forget I ever said anything.
Huh?
I won't say another word. I'll keep my mouth closed forever.
Oh, come on, I wouldn't do that. Mr. Bartell? Mr. Bartell? Won't you even open your mouth to finish your wine? Your Petri wine?
Okay, you win. You know I'll open my mouth for Petri wine any time. That Petri wine is always good wine. And for good reason, too. The Petri family has always owned and operated the Petri business. They've been making fine wines for three generations, since way back in the 1800s. That adds up to a lot of experience. Experience handed on down from father to son, from father to son. The Petri family really knows how to turn luscious California grapes into fragrant, delicious wine. And that's why, no matter what kind of wine you want, I'm sure you'll like it better if it's a Petri wine. Because Petri took time to bring you good wine. And now, Dr. Watson, what story are you going to tell us next week?
Well, now, next week, Mr. Bartell, I'm going to tell you a most unusual adventure that Holmes and I had in the heart of the English countryside. It concerns a corpse, a missing revolver, and a beautiful girl who was frightened of her own shadow.
Tonight's Sherlock Holmes adventure is written by Dennis Green and Anthony Boucher and is based on an incident in the Sir Arthur Conan Doyle story, The Man with the Twisted Lip. Mr. Rathbone appears through the courtesy of Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer, and Mr. Bruce through the courtesy of Universal Pictures, where they are now starring in the Sherlock Holmes series. The Petri Wine Company of San Francisco, California, invites you to tune in again next week, same time, same station.
Oh, the Petri family took the time to bring you such good wine. So when you eat and when you cook, remember Petri wine.
To make good food taste better, remember...
Pet, pet, Petri wine.
This is Harry Bartell saying goodnight for the Petri family. Sherlock Holmes comes to you from our Hollywood studios. This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.
Listening to Ricky Jin's Old Time Radio. Join us again next week at the same time on the Mighty KONR. Don't forget to play What Will Mrs. Thompson Say at lgab.com.